Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, I'm Ian Parkinson. Thanks for listening to the Ruler podcast. On this edition, we have some of the fastest women on two wheels and a new name in pro cycling photography, plus the chance to win a Ruler t-shirt in the podcast quiz. First off, two Olympic gold medals, five world championship titles, European and Commonwealth champion, and now author. Jo Rousel-Shan's book, Full Circle, is published this month, reflecting on her career as one of the most successful graduates of Team GB's so-called medal factory.
I retired in March this year after basically 6 months of deliberation after Rio, thinking, shall I go for Tokyo or not? So yeah, announced my retirement in March and started writing the book end of March, spent about 6 months on that, finally went to print end of September, early October, and now it's out on the shelves. So it's all a bit scary. It was quite a nice process going through the writing process to reflect on my career. But yeah, now it's out, I'm thinking, I hope people like it, because it's sort of letting everybody into your world, isn't it? But so far, I seem to have had some good reviews, so that's good.
I was going to ask about the process, because presumably, you know, you haven't had a chance to sit down and think about what's been happening for the past few years because you've been so busy with your cycling career. Was it a good process? Was it sort of, did it feel good to sit down and think again?
It was almost sort of therapeutic in some ways. So 5 years ago, after the London Olympics, I was actually asked to write a book then. I turned it down, given that I was only 23 years old. I thought that's probably a little bit early for an autobiography. I mean, some might say 28 is too early as well, but at the time I thought 23, that's not really the time. But I did do some writing back then, which I just saved on my computer, that I sort of wrote about that year and some of the things that happened that year. So that was useful, because there are lots of stuff when I went back and read that I'd forgotten about. So that actually helped me a lot in the writing process. But in general, yeah, quite therapeutic. Just sit at the computer, type away. It gave me something to do as well. So when you're an athlete, when you're a full-time cyclist, your rest and recovery is so important. So you do all your training, and then once you stop training, you're still sort of working in a sense, because you're still trying to rest. But now suddenly, when I wasn't training, when I did have free time, I was like, well, what am I doing now? What am I doing in my life? What am I working towards? So being able to have the book to write, there was always something to do, whether it was choosing photos to go in or changing captions or you know, editing chapters. There was always a little bit of something to do at a different time. So it was nice to have an ongoing project as like a sort of a target, basically, to work towards.
So what happens now then? Now you've got the book out of the way, what are you going to do with your retirement?
Oh, lots of different things. I started a degree in physiology at Manchester Met Uni about 6 weeks ago now. So I'm now officially a full-time student, but luckily my timetable was only over 3 days, so it gives me lots of free time around that for other bits and bobs. There is obviously all the coursework and everything as well, but yeah, enjoying sort of being back in education. I'm also doing quite a bit of work sort of freelance in the media, whether it's punditry or co-commentating for cycling events. It's quite a passion of mine to hopefully see more women cycling on TV, because I think it deserves it. I think there's far too many people that say, oh, women's sport's got a long way to go in terms of development. I'm like, no, it doesn't. It's a very developed sport. It's very highly competitive with some brilliant athletes. You're just not showing it on TV. So I'm quite keen to sort of increase, you know, visibility of women's cycling in that sense, because I think it deserves it. As well as lots of other things, so I'm doing a bit with the charity Alopecia UK, which I never really had time for before. I'm also on the BOA Athletes Commission, but really enjoying, in general, just being able to say yes to things. Because as an athlete, it was always a no. It was no, I'm training, no, I'm away in a training camp, no, I'm at a race. And also as a track rider, as an endurance track rider, you never really get an off season, because you do track all winter, you have the track wheels, then you go off and race on the road over the summer. So you never get that sort of really good off season a pure road rider gets. So enjoying being able to say yes, whether it's a birthday or a christening or a wedding or whatever it is, been able to say yes to things finally.
Do you miss any of the training, the discipline, the early starts at the velodrome, all that?
Don't miss any of that. I do miss some of the people. So I don't miss the discipline and regime of training, but I do enjoy still running my bike just for fun, which I'd never really done before. It was never a hobby for me. From day one, it was a job. So I'm enjoying running my bike for fun. So I can still do the elements of training that I like and not the elements I didn't like. Mainly just missing some of the people that I used to work with, because I used to go to the velodrome pretty much every day, and you've got such a strong support network there, which, you know, you build relationships with people that... you know, you go through so much with them that it's a shame to walk away from those people. But ultimately, I was done with running the bike around in circles. So it was the right decision to go. But yeah, I do miss some of the people.
Because as you mentioned there, you didn't really have a sort of conventional start in cyclosport, did you? You weren't a bike rider when you were picked for potential training.
Not at all. So when I was 15, I was talent spotted. And at the time, I was vaguely aware of track cycling in the Olympics. I think I'd seen Jason Queeley whiz around the velodrome in Sydney, perhaps on TV, vaguely aware of something like the Tour de France existing, but no knowledge at all of cycling history, no knowledge that track bikes had no brakes, complete novice. But I was talent spotted at school basically to get out of a double maths lesson. I missed my maths lesson. I went up to the school playing field, raced around the field on some bikes that British Cycling brought along with them, was told I could be quite good. I did some more testing on a static bike, which was far more scientific rather than just the school playing field, and that's where I really did well. And basically was told I had the raw talent to be a future potential Olympic cyclist. So it was a steep learning curve. I read a lot of other cycling autobiographies to learn a bit about the background of the sport. I became definitely a cycling fan quite quickly. I watched the Athens Olympics, completely engrossed in that. It was probably not the conventional start in cycling. I didn't come from a cycling family at all, but it's nice for me to have seen the change in cycling over that time, because back then it wasn't such a mainstream sport as it is now. So it's nice to have seen that change.
And so much of that, of course, was 2012, wasn't it? Your first Olympics on home ground, and that turned, you know, made cycling really mainstream and turned you into superstars.
I think that was a huge turning point, partly because of the success, but also, like, I mean, I'm from Surrey, so I used to train up Box Hill in Surrey every day to get home. And the Olympic road race was there, and that's now become an iconic climb. And it's funny because there's actually tougher climbs in Surrey, but, you know, people flock to the area to be able to ride up the climb from the Olympic road race. So, yeah, the London Olympics did wonders for sport in the UK, across all sports, definitely, but cycling, because we were so successful as well, it has been amazing to see the huge change in participation since then.
And how many times a day, on average, do sort of people come up to you and want to talk about the Olympics or talk about your career?
Yeah, I still tend to get recognised, often when I'm on trains, actually. I think when you're on a train, people get time to sort of sit there and look at you, and I do spend a lot of time on trains these days commuting about the country. So, yeah, I still do get, most days, someone come up to me and say that they recognise me and sort of, well done, and congratulate me. The other day I was on the tube, actually, completely in the world of my own, not concentrating at all. Someone came up to me and said, well done. And I said to him, what for? And he was like, for the Olympics. And I was like, oh, sorry, I was completely away with the fairies there. Sorry about that. It is nice that people still are buzzing about the success, because that's what it's all about. It's about inspiring people, not just young people, of all ages. So it is nice that people still talk about it.
Joe Rousel-Shand. The Ruler Classic in London once again saw the announcement of the Vox Women Rider of the Year, which this time went to Annemiek van Vleuten of Orica AIS. After her horrific crash in the Olympic road race in Rio, Annemiek turned in some brilliant performances in 2017, including wins in La Course and the World Time Trial Championship, points and mountains jerseys in the Giro, and a strong showing in the Classics. Her reward was picked up by her fellow Dutchwoman, the recently retired Iris Schlappendel. Iris joined me on the podcast sofa, along with Tiffany Cromwell of Canyon SRAM and Canyon SRAM's DS Beth Durea. It's been an up-and-down season once again for top-flight women's racing. Some new teams, some excellent competition, but still the sense that more money and more coverage is needed for the sport to properly flourish. So what was there to be optimistic about this year? First Beth, then Tiffany, then Iris.
In general, I think that being the second year of the Women's World Tour was a great step forward. I think that it definitely we could spend hours talking about things that we would like to improve about it, but at least that it's there. It's created a system now that we can move forward with. And I think that the Women's World Tour, the introduction of more races to that, to the World Tour this year, I think has been a positive. So I think this is something to take away from the 2017 so far. Also having the standalone races such as women's tour stage race, but then being able to introduce an Ardennes Classic for women. I think those two aspects of the calendar are definitely highlights, I would say.
Yeah, for me, obviously from within the peloton, it's been exciting seeing the depth grow. Like every year, you know, we saw a lot of great battles between top teams. You know, it wasn't just like obviously last couple of years had Bols Dommens have dominated a lot, but we've seen, you know, quite a few other teams step up, and we've seen some fantastic battles from a racing side. In terms of, as you say, as Beth was speaking, the growth of the sport and getting more big races. Some of the New Age nations too are seeing better exposure. Like a lot of people kind of don't see the Australian side, but obviously I'm seeing it firsthand. We had Women's Tour Down Under, which was aligned a lot with the men's side. We had, you know, coverage in the newspapers, like front page coverage at the Cadel Evans Road Race. We had primetime TV live coverage into the Women's Australian Open tennis final. So these are big, massive steps to see. And then, you know, here in the UK, like live at Tour of Yorkshire, the Women's Tour of Britain, Prudential. So we are seeing that growth and the progress. Like, things are slow, but it's moving in the right direction. And as long as it continues moving forward and we keep pushing boundaries and we keep increasing all aspects of the sport, we're going to get to the point where we want to see women's cycling get to. And that's exciting, you know, exciting to be a part of.
And Iris, as someone who's sort of stepped outside you know, day-to-day involvement in the sport, from that perspective, how did you see this year?
Well, yeah, it was my first year as a fan of women's cycling. So, yeah, well, I'm watching now from another perspective. And, yeah, you would almost regret, you know, retiring when there's races like Amstel Gold Race on the calendar now. But at the same time, it's been really amazing to follow women's cycling. And especially, yeah, as Tiffany mentioned, the depth of the field. There's been so many different winners this year in the Women's World Tour. And you see also younger riders really stepping up and be part of the finals. And it's just been really exciting races. So, it's a good life being a women's cycling fan at the moment.
Did you start a bit too early, do you think?
Yeah, maybe I started too early, but I could have also continued. That's not a, thing, but... You know, there's a time for everything. And at the same time, I'm also happy to still be able to do stuff for women's cycling. Being part of the Athletes Commission this year, not being a rider, I was able to spend much more time actually in this kind of work.
So. As a woman on the UCI Athletes Commission, is there a sense there that you're, if you know the expression, pushing it an open door? Do you think there's a willingness there to really improve women's cycling, or are you struggling inside that organisation a bit?
Well, I'm not so sure with the new president, actually. I don't know him, and I can't really say about what I've read. I don't know if he really has a clear idea about women's cycling, but I think for sure the UCI sees the potential of women's cycling, and there are people within the UCI they really care and they really want to grow the sport. It's just still, like cycling in general, a very male-dominated organization. But, you know, at the end, the UCI is, I would say, just a regulator, so... The future of women's cycling is not depending on the UCI.
I had a lot of conversations earlier in the year with women racers and with teams about La Course, the Tour de France, the Tour de France related event. A lot of discussion about how it was going to work, whether it was going to work or not. We'll talk about next year in a bit. But how did you think it went this year? It was an experiment. Did it work?
From a rise perspective, there was elements that was good and elements that was not so great. I think definitely having a different stage, you know, the Champs-Élysées is always special because, you know, the iconicness of Champs-Élysées racing the centre of Paris is beautiful, but at the end of the day, it's a glorified criterium. For us to have a stage to show the true beauty and the strength of the sport, it was fantastic to see a great battle on a mountaintop. You know, we did. We saw what women's cycling truly capable of. Like, it was a great battle all the way up the Col d'Izard, but then they still was quite a short stage. The second element, people were quite confused about it. I don't believe that part worked. And, you know, even so much so before the race, we're in the team meeting and we're like, so as of tomorrow, we don't really know what's happening. Like, there could be 20 people starting in Marseille. There could be 5 people starting in Marseille. So it seemed like just people were confused. But we're all about trying different ideas, so I'm open to that, sure. And, you know, obviously the Tour de France organised ASO want to try something different. But then they say, okay, for next year it's a one-day race. And people are like, oh, that's not progress. But I still think what we have next year is better than what we have of the 2 days of this year. You know, next year is a true race. It's 120K. It's got some climbs. It's got descents. It's got racing elements. We can truly showcase what women's cycling is so beautiful and what's so fantastic about with that global exposure that we want. There's elements that worked and elements that didn't. And racing on a mountain stage as well, you know. From the fans to having the media there, everyone was... I was sceptical to start with, I'm not going to lie. When I got there at the race, I felt like, okay, there was a lot of positives that came out of it.
And you sound reasonably positive about next year as well.
Yeah, you know, like, it's such an ongoing discussion what we want. Everyone's the Tour de France, has races, whatever. But I want races that are fun, exciting, a platform to showcase the sport. If we can have a fantastic one-day race, for me, that's perfect, you know. It's still, you know, it's linked within the biggest sporting event in the world, one of the biggest sporting events in the world, and it's a platform that we can showcase our sport with, a true platform, not just, you know, like a half effort, like a 60K race, for example, you know. So for me, at this stage, yes. Where it goes next, that's the next question, but I like one-day races, so I'm happy with La Course next year.
Stefan Wyman said shortly after the announcement was made, I'm not sure whether we saw it or not, that, you know, actually we should probably stop obsessing about La Course and the Tour de France and actually concentrate on building up the rest of the calendar and really making sure that that's worthy of television coverage, is a proper representation of the sport. Do you think that's a fair point?
I mean, for sure, I agree with him that we also need to focus on building up the rest of the women's calendar. But at the same time, you can't deny that La Course, for all of the negatives you can point out, at the same time, it offers one of the biggest platforms for exposure for women's cycling in the world. And in terms of the numbers, the reach, the viewers, the fans of it, you cannot deny that. And there's no other race on the calendar, unfortunately, that provides that. So you need to try to look at both, I think, to try to develop a La Course where you can utilize all of those figures and numbers and viewers and exposure. Whether that's changing the format, and that might be changing it from year to year, or it might be finding a format that works, but also on the other side, also looking at the rest of the calendar. So it can't be both. You cannot win with that, such a big opportunity around La Course. You can't just scrap it and say, no, it doesn't work for us. I mean, it would make no sense. But at the same time, I mean, in terms of the team and on the calendar, La Course is a highlight, but it's not the only race as well, so...
Beth Durer, Tiffany Cromwell and Iris Slappendal. The world of pro cycling photography is fiercely competitive and hard to break into. One name that's been appearing quite a bit recently is the Irish photographer Karen Edwards, whose new book, Gods, Rockstars and the Cobbles, is just published.
I'm in pro cycling 18 months now. It started maybe back in 2012 as a hobby, taking photographs of Irish cycling, just local races. What actually happened was I had been cycling myself, training to race, and I'd got sick. And in order to keep in with the cycling, I went and I bought a camera and took myself out in the mountain and started taking pictures, and I soon discovered that, you know, this is something that I actually wanted to do. I'd put out a few pictures on social media, and some pro cycling photographers had got in touch and they said, you know, you've got something a little bit different. Would you, you know, try to go down that line? I had no confidence, so I didn't. I just thought, no, I don't want to go down there. So, yeah, that's how it kind of started, yeah.
So you had a bit of a cycling background to start with?
Yes, my uncle was a great rider in Ireland, Mick Cahill. He rode the Ross in Ireland, the Ross Tarleton. He was second way back in 1970, I think. So I, as a baby, I would travel around with my parents supporting him. So the bicycle was always definitely part of my life.
How have you sort of found it breaking in, particularly to the pro cycling scene? Has it been welcoming?
It's been really hard, but I suppose initially when I started off, it's trying to prove that you're not there kind of messing about. You go in, I suppose for me, I wanted to go in and show that I had something a little bit different and prove that I was there to do my work, do the best that I could in promoting cycling. That's what I wanted to do. And to show cycling in the way that I see it, all aspects, not just the race, that there's a whole circus arena around cycling.
And how would you describe your style? Because you do have a sort of distinct style of photography, don't you?
I suppose slightly punchy. I want to... It's not perfect, my photography, but I kind of purposely do it like that. I like to make people feel like they're actually at the race, that they're, you know, in my shoes, they're seeing right there in the middle of it. Not just the race, the fans, the landscapes, the weather, the colours, because, I mean, colours change from different countries. I just want to bring the actual public and the fans into the race.
You've got this book out. I'm going to try and get the title right. It's Gods, yes. Rock Stars and Cobbles.
Yes.
Most of the photographs are from the classics.
Yes.
What is it about the classics that particularly appeals to you?
It's just the history. The cobbles are amazing. Just watching the riders as they race over those cobbles, it's breathtaking. I mean, I do them on the motorbike, and I mean, it's bumpy on that, but like to actually race on those cobbles, they're so unlevel, and oh, it's amazing. The darkness, the history, I just love everything about it.
Karen Edwards. And all that remains is the podcast quiz. Last time we asked you which member of the Aqua Blue Sport Management team won a stage in the 2009 Tour de France. The answer was Nicky Sorensen, and the winner was Graham Bradford. Well, this time, and again for a Ruler T-shirt, it's a question about Vox Women Rider of the Year, Annemiek van Vleuten. Annemiek won two stages of the Giro Rosa and took the points and mountains jerseys. But where did she finish overall? Annemiek won two stages of the Giro Rosa and took the points and mountains jerseys. But where did she finish overall? Go to the Ruler website, check out the page for this podcast. Full details of how to enter will be there. Thanks for listening. Catch up next time.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.